When we discussed the idea of making a tape originally, it was felt important that two artists concerned with evolving a meaningful women's practice initiated this discussion. And growing out of the recent public conferences organised in London by the Women's Free Alliance were a number of issues. Perhaps we could take some of them up later, but begin by discussing the differences between, on the one hand, evolving a meaningful practice generally, and then the problems of evolving a meaningful women's practice. Presumably, the two things would have something in common and overlap, but there would be a residual area within which you as women would find yourself situated.
Well, possibly I'd always find it necessary to elaborate some general historical kind of conjuncture within which we as women were working. And I think what I said in the seminar, I feel it's quite important that some notion of a social totality that includes a number of instances which I defined as economic, political, and ideological, help to actually provide an understanding of the limits and the possibilities of an art practice, because I place it very much within the ideological instance of that social totality. And I say that an art practice, in fact, didn't just reproduce the ideology of that moment, but in fact it reworked it. And if you were going to define the practice, it was through a kind of reworking of that ideology, in this case, in my case, the feminist ideology, in such a way that you actually produce a new meaning. And so that has actually a long-term political effect, possibly, insofar as that making that ideological instance, again, the feminist ideology, explicit, that possibly you have a political effect. Right, and I feel that kind of statement actually covers you from a kind of crude insertion into the political instance. I mean, you can actually never claim a direct effect at that level. And I think a lot of problems that people on the left have come from that type of reduction of an art practice to a political practice. And in fact, it means that nothing exciting about art comes to the fore. But if you do engage it at the level of the ideological instance, then I think you've got another set of problems, which are, of course, that the individual subject, if you want, I mean, how you actually understand the notion of the subject in terms of ideology is quite crucial. Again, I'd say that it's not a constituted subject, but a subject being constituted by that moment. And then that allows you to say, how is the female subject being constituted at that moment? And then you'd say how, I suppose, in a sense, the women's art practice has the possibility even of revitalizing the practice at a given historical point.
Mary and I have been talking about these things on and off for some time, and I like the way we plunge right into the exact point of our disagreement by her statement, because although I'm completely emotionally in sympathy, in a sense, with her position, mine is so divergent from it in a way, because I've started from the idea of this subjective, what I call the necessity for truth-telling in art, which strangely enough has led me to similar conclusions, although I wouldn't place the problem specifically on the level of politics and ideology, but rather on the overall level of culture and language, which is to me more of an overview and also bypasses a lot of the male thought on the subject, which is another point of divergence that we have, because I feel there's a struggle to unite in my practice, right, as a woman and an artist, there's a struggle to unite the subjective with the language of public discourse or the art meta language or whatever we want to, wherever we want to situate that particular problem, because culturally women are, in a sense, very much at a disadvantage. They're alienated from the mainstream language or distanced from it to some extent. And consequently, at the moment, you either have, let's say, you either have women artists who are who are speaking the dominant, the ordinary languages of art and speaking them rather politely, or you have a kind of confrontational approach which thinks of, you know, sort of crashing through the dominant structure and coming up with something else. But I don't feel it that way. I don't perceive it that way. It seems to me that everyone is both a victim and a kind of beneficiary of the culture, right? And as women, we are not in a position to speak our own language. After all, in our society, we do all theoretically share a language. It's not a culture that has a man's language and a woman's language, right? But because of our experience, there are certain disjunctions, certain discontinuities, and certain, I think, very valuable new perceptions. Now, I've always called these perceptions paraconceptual because they're not encoded linguistically and they're not explicitly encoded in art practice. And it's those particular kinds of things which tend to be, in a sense, future-oriented or even slightly science fiction, which interest me. And I think it's by this kind of paradoxical statement, right? An awareness of the disjunction and a playing off with one's own self, the eye of the artist, right? The subjective eye and the objective eye are not unified for women artists.
I mean, I don't think I'd establish the same sort of duality between subjectivity and objectivity.
Yes, well, I've spoken of it as a dualism. I mean, I've said this, an unreconciled dualism, and it's within that tension to me that one has the possibility of speaking the truth. And go on.
It's a duality that exists more or less as the condition for women's entry into language. That's the way I understand what you're saying.
Yes, that's right. But what disturbs me, in a sense, about what you're saying is I feel that your own work is very, very subtle and tends to be discussed. Now we're talking about public discourse. It's discussed or seen as a set of polemical statements, right, the contents of which are political and or psychoanalytic, but not art. I mean, I'm putting this in the crudest sense, right? This is, if you like, the criticism I have of the critics of your work, that they tend to flatten it and simplify it. I wonder what you thought about that.
Well, we were talking about this before, and I feel that there's such a kind of resistance to work in art. It's not just kind of that it's representing women's work, but it's actually working over material in a way which art usually is associated with entertainment. And particularly, I think, in women's art. And I don't know if I've actually been right in doing what I did, because it certainly seems to have caused a lot of antagonism, but I intentionally wanted to set up that kind of antagonism between so-called felt experience and the working over of that material. And I didn't fill in the gaps. I was saying, look, that gap exists. And I mean, at the level of everyday language, which is included in the work, there's a certain reference to consciousness raising and to women's. Anybody can read that material. I mean, it's like your everyday experience. But in a sense, there's not. I'm saying that you're someone who's got a worldview, right? You're rationalizing, if you want, that material. It doesn't mean theorizing, but actually a kind of secondary revision of that material is also a necessary part of it. And that has to be represented. And I was saying, hopefully, that that represented the difficulty of what I call the symbolic for women. And I think that's where the rejection comes. On the one hand, say, from women who resist, I suppose it's the patriarchal evidence of the symbolic in something like the diagrams. But on the other hand, I think it can alienate men in the sense that it says, well, you can't fetishize theory because it also has a link with that experience, that women's work, if you want, from which they're excluded through the structure of the patriarchy.
In fact, the basic idea of much of what I'm doing is examining the edges of paradox and ambiguity, right, present in the culture. And beyond that, asking the question about whether the linguistic as a paradigm can work for the supposedly other basic structures within the culture. I mean, this is always simply asserted, and nobody really is bringing it into question. And because of my, what I consider my ambiguous placement within language, I have to question that. You know, I cannot. I have to play the things off against each other. But this again seems rather elusive to people. Now, my concern here, and I mean, this is again, this is not at all an abstract thing that I'm going to say. I mean, I really feel it as a kind of obstacle that women's practice in some sense has got to take into account. It's that there is, for whatever reason you want to attribute it, an incredible weight against allowing women to become the significators or the makers of significance within the culture. So consequently, when their work appears, there, a device of some kind is always found for channeling it off the main areas of high cultural discourse, right? So we can deal with this. This is postcards, this is politics, whatever it is not going to be art. And even the confrontational sort of challenges that are thrown down within the work, to ongoing work by our contemporaries, is often somehow seen as insignificant because there's another way of getting to the work. Now, the way I'm putting it then is to sort of make it say, I'm trying to say that the onus is somehow on those others to recognize the work of women, but there is also a problem that Mary and I have discussed, which is the fact that when women artists talk about their work, there's also a difficulty in the language that they choose, and there's almost a need for looking outside of art for the reference points to begin to talk about the work. And so in a way we lead ourselves back into this impasse of being boxed off under other heading. I don't know what you felt about that, for instance.
First of all, you know, there seems to be a number of problems that you're outlining to do with understanding on appropriate terms in women's art practice in what I think you describe as male-dominated language codes. But on the other hand, you know, Mary seems to be operating quite happily within that established structure, but a secondary function of the work seems to be to reform those codes, but not as perhaps you, Susan, feel is necessary, which is somehow to fundamentally and initially initiate change within those codes and within terms of reference of looking at the work.
Well, can I just say I'm not happily operating. And that what she's just outlined, I think, actually expresses the impossibility of your position, if you want, within the patriarchy. And what I'm doing is rather, I suppose, unhappily trying to make that contradiction explicit. That's why I say I'm also being critical of the theory that I'm using, mm-hmm. and showing my distance from it. But neither am I satisfied to just, if you want, to dismiss it, or to actually, it's a kind of glorification of underdevelopment in the sense of saying that perhaps this felt, actually it's a major kind of philosophical problem, whether you say everything's noble on the basis of felt experience or not. That's something which I actually strongly object to. But on the question of language, I think we agree to some extent about, I mean, as Susan said earlier, there's no possible way in which you can be outside of that given symbolic structure. I mean, what you're placed negatively, if you want, within it, and what you're trying to do is to elaborate that position in a kind of confrontation. And what we're objecting to is the way women's art is made into a kind of alternative which actually rescues its negative place again, and not allowing it to make a kind of intervention in what you called cultural discourse.
Well, I'm not, you see, it's not the centrality or lack of it. I'm not looking to build a culture where a woman is necessarily at the center, but I am, because of my own lack of ease in this situation, I know that that's shared. I mean, I'm not a unique instance of this. And so I know that the solution is a development which will have the universal person being neither male nor female. This is, you see, what I'm talking about is something like the use of the first person in poetry, right? The I, the woman I, is not a universal speaker for the culture, which has led all women poets into difficulty. A fascinating and significant difficulty, and they don't want to make their effort minor by saying that, but they have never been able to speak as man. I mean, why, you know, there's always that alienation. Now, we have the same problem. And our statements of I tend to be complex because we are now historically at a position where we know this, right? We try to deal with that. Both our works our work has that in common, I would say, the element of awareness of the disjunction between language and experience, theory and experience, and so forth, and an attempt to bring the two into some kind of line. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
Right. But this is apparently a difficult thing for people to see. I mean, it's not a display merely of sensibility, but it is uniquely the sort of statement that only women can make. And yet, because of that, the statement has no place.
There was something we...
Now I've become very depressed.
I know. We were talking about earlier about the I, which is very significant in actually speaking about the way the subject is constituted, if you want, and the significance of the I, which is its kind of social placement in the world, and what a kind of ego ideal represents in terms of that social world, which is usually men. I mean, and a woman in identifying with the mother actually relocates herself constantly within the family. And that what I found in my experience is that this huge absence when I'm talking to men of having a history. I mean, while they're talking, I mean, as I say about, Bruce, I was saying, talking about Marcel Broadhouse, and in fact, who's the kind of relationship with the father, and the way it enters into the work, because you're always speaking for the other. But who is the other that the woman is actually speaking for? I mean, it's only in this kind of absent position of the mother, and that's partly why in the work that I do, I'm speaking about that place in the family, because that identification with the mother is the only possible one. And there's kind of absence of mothers, we always say, in art, and the kind of absence of the start of history, because the only way that they've been incorporated were in a kind of phallic sense, if you want. They actually adopt that kind of signification. I mean, I don't even know if it's possible for you to do other than that, but it seems to be interesting that at this moment we recognize it. I mean, we recognize
it. Yes, it's a conscious possibility. I would say, though, that in my work I've tried another option or another ploy, if you like, which is the idea of collectivizing my ego. The idea of collaborating with, either in practice, in a number of group pieces, right, where I've seen the role of artist simply as that of a designer or someone who lays out the ground rules, then the artist simply becomes one of a number of equal participants who are responsible for the work, the enactment of the work. Or in this recent piece that I showed, the idea of collaborating with a number of dead anonymous artists. And it's interesting that I see my ego as anonymous, nevertheless, anonymous but extensive, I mean. That's, you know, I see that as a device which consciously now, but previously unconsciously, I've utilized in order to enable myself to work. The question of mother figures in art is very interesting, and here I think there's a difference between England and the States. I mean, this is a very kind of broad statement, but in America there's been a big interest in incorporating, in creating history of women as artists, and so they've been involved in analyzing and discussing and admiring, most of all, the work of people like Nevelson, Agnes Martin, George O'Keefe, so forth. Whereas comparable artists in this country, Bridget Riley, Elizabeth Frink, Barbara Hepworth, are not really accepted, particularly by younger women, as antecedents, because their own relationship to the whole gender and art problem has been ambiguous, right? As was the case with these American women, because the movement hasn't focused so much on specifically defining socio-political issues and has been more a kind of a pressure group to promote the emergence of women artists into the forefront of culture. There's been about 10 years of terrific solidarity, and so there's been no argument about the fact that these women were or were not, you know, ambiguous in their own cultural placement. The idea was that they had achieved something, and one could identify as a role model with the ability of another woman to achieve. Whereas here, the situation is even more complex and subtle. You know?
I think I covered my position in what I said before about the way they were actually incorporated within a male-dominated culture.
Yes, but I'm asking specifically what you think about the difference between the cultural difference there between the United States and Britain, because there is one.
But the reason that American women are more resilient, I would say, has nothing to do with that. That would be my position. It has much more to do with the States being an advanced capitalist country that has changed the system of education in a way that's actually allowed things like art and women to thrive in a way that the economic system here can't. But that gets us into diversion. Well, one of the things that interests me, say, about Susan's work is that I'm very concerned that women don't actually elaborate their position as almost symptoms, if you want, of the man. And one of the ways in which you actually do that is by an emphasis on the constitution of the subject. That is, you're displacing it from woman as object. I mean, to kind of woman as subject. That doesn't mean centered subject, but it means you're dealing with the kind of almost larger issues of knowledge itself, almost. In the way that your work actually, the way it systematizes.
Or the alienation from knowledge.
Right, that's what I was going to say. It's precisely that you're dealing with, I mean, as men and women do enter into language, and they do actually explore metaphorically the mother's body in order to recognize their own sexual place, you've then got, again, a kind of metaphor for the whole of human development, if you want. And in a sense, I feel that, I mean, your work explores that and explores the alienating effects of that instance.
But one of the things that seems difficult about talking about what we're talking about, one of many things that seems difficult, is that there's another whole issue here which is unspoken, which is to what extent, let's say, the methodological tools, and you know I'm very big on methodology and I try to avoid the theory, let's say the methodological tools that we find it necessary or interesting or fascinating to use are themselves beyond the grasp of, or not beyond the grasp, but beyond the interest range, almost, of people who think they're interested in art. For example, with your show at the ICA, in discussing it with people, I found that discussing it with men, if they were familiar with the background material, they immediately got the point of your piece, and they were very interested. Do you see what I mean?
Otherwise they're excluded, you're saying.
Yeah.
When I'm,
and I feel this may be the problem, and maybe some kind of answer to what you just said to me.
I mean, it's not as though I'm indifferent, and you wouldn't be either, to the problems of accessibility.
No.
But unless, I mean, I think we should actually try not to be too discouraged by actually carrying on in a mode that involves some sort of work and stretching of kind of limits of the problem that we're dealing with. And obviously after the show I thought a lot about, anyway, what an eccentric moment that is in the first few months of a child's life, and hopefully thinking as time goes on, the very nature of the problem will become more social and the work will become more easily accessible, because you could see a shift of that kind from the first work to the later one. So that, I mean, possibly, because also I'm very involved in the debate as it develops within the movement, I don't feel so isolated in those problems, because there are other tendencies in the movement debating psychoanalysis at the moment, you know, that I do get some support from, and feel that if the work didn't exist in that context, it would have very little meaning for me. And we're all into the same sort of question about the work, which gives me a kind of motive, you know, for carrying it on. And I think one of the things that we all feel very clear about is that there's this enormous problem of how, I mean, we can see how we got into psychoanalysis. I mean, the notion of ideology should be based on a theory of the unconscious. And certainly in Althusser's work, the way he describes the problems of representation, which I don't know isn't a problem to be taken up at this moment, but which is related to my practice in broader kind of political terms, is that there was no kind of easy way out again. In fact, that it couldn't be bridged, that gap between, say, the individual taking his sexed place in society and the individual as a member of, say, a class, which, and also there's a lot of criticism of Althusser's attempt to make that link at the moment. And I think the positive part of the investigation has been to use that as a critique of feminist ideology itself. But we don't yet know actually how it's going to construct a future practice. And in that sense, I mean, I don't take the full responsibility, if you want, for the problems the exhibition raised, because I think they are, you know, generally felt.
Lucy Lippard said something that I think is a kind of brilliant summation in a way. She said that she thought that the endeavor, the basic endeavor of women's practice was to turn a temperamental consciousness into cultural consciousness. And I must say that's very apt in terms of what I still sense is an ongoing personal struggle.
But I don't think there's a way to change it into a cultural consciousness without some idea of what that culture is or what its consciousness is at a certain moment. Because I don't feel that there's such a thing as kind of the genius or the artist who exists outside of history. And although I feel that my work makes very personal use of quotes theory, you know, like Althusser, and I haven't described it as theory, I've said it's a kind of secondary revision or a necessary rationalization of.
So you would say it's making sense
but
of as well.
Right, except that I do posit that thing outside the movement.
Yes.
Which is actually structuring.
That's your other, your
reference
right.
other. Right, exactly.
Right.
You have a, you speak from a an overview that I don't feel I can speak from. Because of your mother, the movement, you think.
But I've explained to you that my early experiences within the movement were of these stern mothers who were telling me that my work as an artist was not useful. And that concept of use value, is that kind of mechanistic worldview is something I reject utterly. And as I was rejected, because I was not useful as an artist in those days, at least, I have also been alienated from my mother, if you like, in that kind of way. And so although I'm perfectly capable of acting as though, I mean, acting in the sense of behavior, of very public behavior, of aligning myself with positive action in the world, with the movement and for the movement, I cannot say that my work refers outward to the movement in that way. Perhaps because of that initial experience, I don't know. But it was very traumatic.
I think that we both have said in the past that the left is actually, to a great extent, blackmailed artists, both men and women, rather unwittingly in this country
by
their kind of economic reductionism, because they always want you to be useful or to actually... I think agitational art has been the outcome of that, and a lot of very guilty feelings on the part of artists about their practice. I mean, I do feel that they, just generally, both men and women who are involved in a practice which isn't given... I mean, language doesn't take the sort of primacy, or it doesn't dominate that practice, and it's particularly suited to what I think women want to say in actually subverting language, because it makes a very good use of, if you can say that, of negative capability.
Negative capability is only from the cultural definition. If one consciously recognizes your ambiguous placement or your potential for negative capability, then it becomes, of course, the obverse of that, and it becomes it can become a positive position, I think, from which to work. The difficulty being that to deal with paradox, which is what I feel that, you know, if anyone said, what one word could you sum up women's art, and I would say paradoxical, because it seems to me that in at least what I feel to be the best manifestations of women artists all over the world and working in many different formats, there's often an element of inherent contradiction within the work, or a kind of paradoxical stance in relationship to art itself and to culture itself. And this seems to me to be incredibly valuable, because it's this stance in relationship to language and culture, you see, that is absolutely the key. That's why the moment is potentially so exciting for women artists.